program is intended to people who are print and visually impaired. It is underwritten by the law firm of Naren Wenzel, PA, with offices in Raleigh and Smithfield, and by our friends Mary and David Stevens. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the Triangle Radio Reading Service studio. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics to champion your legal rights so that you may obtain equal access and full participation in your community, and so you can achieve goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies, as well as from nonprofit organizations that promote information on laws supporting independent living. And in today's episode, we're going to pick up once again with the topic of website accessibility. And I'm very excited to have as my guests, first of all, Ann Brennan, Director of Development of Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome, Ann.
Well, thank you, Joe. I am happy to be here with you and Chris.
Well, we're excited to have you, Ann. and our engineer is another guest, Chris Skidmore, who is the program manager for T3 here at Triangle Radio Reading Service. And he also has a program called Tech Tips, which is one that you want to tune into as well. But I wanted to pick back up on this issue of website accessibility, Ann and Chris, because it strikes me that we are more and more getting into a electronic digitating web-based information system. My great concern is that we're going to end up with, we've talked about two Americas in other contexts, but we could have a two Americas that website access being only for a certain segment of the population, and that another segment of the population would be not available. The great future of data explosions and the Internet of Things. And I think you've got some personal perspective on that. Would you share that with our listeners?
Well, sure. Well, first of all, the web accessibility in a nutshell, I had to listen to twice because there was so much information in it. And I am very interested in how much there is out there that I don't know. And I have been partially sighted my whole life, and so growing up in mainstream schools, I had a real requirement to listen, remember, process, and give back. It was just, that's just how it was. And by the time 1990 rolled around, I gone through high school, gone through college, was in the workforce, and wasn't using the computer very much then. It really, I guess I started to. But 1990 was when the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed, and of course the Internet wasn't used that much. And so now we fast forward how many years? 10, 20, 30, holy cow. Almost 30 years, and the Internet is the way of life. So if you have partial vision or you're totally blind, you need to learn how to use it. And the web accessibility process, as they reiterated on several occasions during the interview, is a continuous process, and you need somebody to use it. It's not just accessing information, but it's using the information. I think that when I go on to the Internet, I'm aware of how fortunate I am with the partial sight that I have, because without having to use too many accessibility options, I'm able to read with my corrective lenses, my computer glasses, what I need to. But I'm very aware, for example, last week I was working on a grant, and it was an online application. And I thought to myself, if I did not have the vision that I do have, would I be able to do this grant, to apply online? Because there are a lot of scroll downs. There are a lot of boxes where you need to answer a question with a finite number of characters. So I've developed ways to figure out how to do certain things. I'll write my answers in a Word document and count, find out how many characters I have, and then can cut and paste from there. I don't do all of the application activities right online. I do a lot of things separately. But the point being that I don't think those grant sites probably are accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's interesting because part of the ADA is that your employer can make your accommodations, reasonable accommodations,
right,
for your employment. So it was just interesting.
That's good. I want to come back to the ADA part of it because that really is a conundrum right now. But Chris, thank you for coming back. You've been our guest before, and we're glad to have you back.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Yes, sir. You're on my all-star list. But, Chris, you've got some perspective on the website accessibility issue as well. I think you're actually composing one or building one. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually working on one. I'm also, full disclosure, legally blind, so I'm kind of in the same boat as Ann with low vision. I have enough that I can navigate almost without using any kind of assistive technology. I use a screen magnifier and sometimes a reader. But as far as developing, this is almost uncharted waters for me. It's the first website I've done in a very long time, so I'm relearning a whole bunch of stuff I thought I knew. I'm also getting a crash course in web accessibility. I've been working on the new website for the reading service, and hopefully it'll be up sometime this year. No shameless plug there. But the thing I've been learning is that a lot of the stuff that we were going to do, we need to retailor it because screen readers have a problem sometimes with reading some of the stuff. For example, the streaming media player that is very important to our listeners on the current website, once we go to the new website, will show up as, quote, a blank button. It won't tell you, the screen reader will not tell you what it is. It won't tell you where the play button is, or even if you're on the play button or if it has a play button. So I'm learning a lot there, too. I'm also learning with, you know, the menu buttons, how you've got to reorganize them a little bit. So there's a lot out there that people don't realize that goes into web accessibility.
And that is a good segue to the next thing I wanted to bring up, which was Ann's discovery of a resource that is available to us all. It's called ADA Live. It's a production of the Southeast ADA Center in Atlanta, and it's adalive.org. And there are, the episode that we all viewed
number
65. so there is a wealth of information out there on this and similar issues. But getting back to the accessibility issue here, the ADA. Now we've talked about the ADA many, many times on Legal Matters, and there's the ADA Title I that applies to employment issues. So, for example, employers have to make, if their applications are online, they have to make their applications accessible to people who are visually impaired, who are print impaired. So it's important under ADA Title I. ADA Title II applies to governments and their public facilities offered by the government have to be accessible under the ADA. And then there's Title III, and that's really where the action is for our present purposes, I think, because we're talking about websites that are put out there by businesses, by agencies, by institutions, by schools. And if they have got a website, it's got to be accessible. Now, what is the trick? The trick is there's no standards. There is the conundrum, the modern conundrum. The businesses and institutions and government agencies have to comply with the ADA, but there's no book they can pull off the shelf that will tell them, you know, what it is that they have to do to make their website accessible. So we have to resort to some other principles and other resources. Anne, did you pick up on any of those in your research?
Well, I did, and I truthfully didn't have time to investigate to be able to come back and report on how many websites have at the bottom of the page accessibility mm-hmm. on them, because what they told us, what they taught us in this webinar, is that the websites that have accessibility at the bottom or as a link are the websites that are, and I don't want to say in compliance because we're not talking about
right.
compliance, but rather talking about something that's generally regarded as a good thing to do, but not a legal requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically those accessibility options are not just font sizes, but if you unplug your mouse, I believe is what they said, mm-hmm. and you tab and you scroll and you page up and you page down and you use your keyboard that way, that some of the sites are going to be the way you need them to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly, the other day when I was logging on to my bank, I should have looked to see. I didn't think to do that. I just went to enter username and password. But now that I think about it, if you boo-boo when you type in your password and another screen will come up and say, okay, retype, or we'll send you a text with a code that'll to your phone or email that will allow you to get in. I thought, wow, you know, you've got to be able to see to do that, or you've got to be able to have all of your equipment set up so that you can do that.
Yeah, you have touched on several things there. And of course, I'm not sure what my vision is. I guess I see 2020 with my glasses on. But so
that's all that matters.
So the one of the takeaways that I got from the website that we looked at was POUR principle, mm-hmm. POUR. Chris, is that prior to getting into this episode, was that something that you were aware of, the POUR principle, perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust?
No, it was not. I had not heard of that before.
Mm-hmm. But does it resonate with you? I mean, as a person who has to navigate through these websites and as a person that is building a website, let's kind of go down the list. Perceivable. What jumps up at you about that?
I guess the perceivable thing is to make, you know, what is it when somebody visits the site for the first time, what are they going to be able to, quote unquote, see right off the bat?
Mm-hmm.
From a developer standpoint, what kind of obstacles can I foresee right off the top of my head that somebody might have visiting the site?
Mm-hmm. And then operable. Now, here I am, like I say, with my glasses on, I probably see 20/20 maybe. But operable, it doesn't take long for a digitally challenged person like myself to just get lost in these doggone things. But from your point of view, Chris, what does operability refer to?
To me, operability refers to the ability to be able to navigate the site easily. Are the menus easily labeled? Are the links clearly labeled? That kind of thing.
Here's a question. You know, I think that, you know, for me, having grown up prior to the digital age, if I need to look up something, long before I was middle aged. I think I had grandchildren before the digital age.
I was
he's lying, folks.
Yeah, I was in my mid 20s when I first started using the internet. So
right?
I grew up in a non digital age too.
Mm-hmm. But I would if I needed to look something up, I'd pull a book off the shelf.
Well, yeah, that's how you're supposed to do it. Or go to the library.
To the library.
That's BI before internet. You went to the library.
But here's a question. Is the potential there for people who have facility with these POR principles and if they are website that is consistent with the POR principles, are they advantaged or at least, well, let me put that on the table and tell me what you think about that. Is there an advantage to having been steeped in the digital age over being one who has been brought up in the book age?
I'll jump in on that one.
Yeah, okay.
I can definitively say that if I had had the digital age growing up, things would have been a lot different for me. For me, going to the library was I don't want to use the word traumatic experience, uh-huh. but it wasn't far from it because it was so hard for me to find the material I needed to find in an old library. Meanwhile, here comes the internet, and I can just do a Yahoo search or a Google search and find what it is I need to find, and I've got the ability to either blow it up big enough so that I can read it, or I can have, on the days that I'm feeling lazy, I can have my screen reader read it for me.
Okay, that's a good point. Anne, how about yourself? What's your experience?
Well, I was a library person too, and because of my eyesight, I was a library person, still am, Barnes & Noble, still am, at eye level only. Up above or below is of no interest, but I love to go to the bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
But like Chris, with the digital, the internet's a wonderful thing, but with this POR principle, perceivable, what it looks like, as Chris said, the operable, which to me is structure. So if the structure's good, and the content is good, of course that's obviously important, and it's then understandable. I think the robustness of the experience has a lot to do with how the continuing process of updating a website and updating information and just keeping current.
How good is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think on that, Chris?
I agree with you.
So just a historical fact, under the Obama administration, the Department of Justice issued a set of proposed regulations that were quite, I won't say onerous, but they were detailed anyway. And so many were assuming that set of regulations was going to go into effect. And what has happened is with the current administration, those regulations have been withdrawn. And so, once again, we're adrift without a set of legal regulations to go by. And that can have, in school, the Rehabilitation Act applies and requires schools to have websites and online courses that are accessible to visually impaired. And then we go down the other list that we've already been down, employment, et cetera. Common problems and solutions. Our website episode addressed this. content? Do the images produce meaningful information, and is there alternative text? Chris, what? How does that apply in your use of the internet and in your development of your own website?
So, you know, let's back up just a second and talk about what alternative text is for somebody who may not know. Alternative text is text that you don't see. Even a sighted person won't see it because it is something that is embedded in the background with a picture. And that is one of the ways that a screen reader, screen magnifier will look and see what is the picture of, and the way that it is supposed to work. And I don't use my mag reader in this way because I don't have to, but the way it is supposed to work, if I wanted to know what that picture was, the alt text would give me the name of what the picture's actual name is, and then it would be a little brief description, and it would be something to the effect of TRRS volunteer reader Joe Austin is sitting at a counter with a microphone recording in production room C. That is something that the alt would be in the alt text. And that is how you would be able to find, you know, what or learn what the picture is. I think that it is very important to have alt text. And that's one of the things that I've been doing with the new site is every time I upload a new picture, regardless of whether or not it's going to be used, one of the first things I do is I go into the description, into the alt text, and title it and give a little brief description of what is in the picture. In a nutshell, it works like video description. If you've ever been to a play or a movie that has video description, that's what the alt text does. I do think the alt text is important.
How about order and structure? Headings. Is that a big issue for you, Ann?
Yes. I mean, very much so. Being the development director, I go to a company website and I'm looking for philanthropy or how are we involved in the community or about our mission. So heading, structure, and I like to work fast. I have a mission. I want to find something. I want to find it quickly, and I want to make sure that the investment of time is going to be worthwhile.
Right.
And oftentimes for what I do, I have to fill out a little form. It'll send me to a cyber grants site, and then a lot of questions will come up. Are you a 501c3? Do you provide funds to individuals? The answer, no. And there'll be a bunch of different questions before they actually take me to the site where I can fill out a grant. So the answer to your question is, yep, quick, easy, boom, boom, boom. The headings are very important for me.
And from a developer standpoint, headings are important because that's how screen readers will help someone who's visually impaired navigate the website, because it keys in on the headings before it keys in on the paragraph, so that if someone is tabbing through a page, they literally can tab down to the next heading. They can hear what it's about and then either listen to the paragraph or keep moving. Headings are kind of like headlines on a newspaper.
Is
how they work.
Right. So then another issue is links. Are they recognizable? How important is that in your experience, Ann and Chris? That's a toss-up.
Chris just pointed to me. Well, that's the same thing with the structure. The links in the structure all kind of, for me,
yeah,
I'm looking for links that are going to take me where I need to go.
Yeah, and you know, the easiest thing as a developer that I'm learning is you don't want to say, click here to find out more information, and the click here is the link. What you do is you word it into the sentence structure of whatever it is you're trying to get the person to go to, or if they're interested, they can go to learn more about that particular topic. So, you know, it would say, if you want to learn, you know, our staff is made up of 5 people, and the staff, the word staff would be a clickable link. And it would, and then the screen reader would actually say that the word staff is a clickable link.
Here's another issue or two baked in the same question. How about color and contrast?
Oh, yeah. Color is very important. You can, you know, for some people, white on black is best. For other people's black on white is best. There's also yellow. There's all kinds of different high contrast color options and color variants that you can use. And you know, that's one of the, and again, will attest to this if I give her a chance. you know, visually impaired is different for everybody. There's no one fix.
Mm-hmm.
No cookie cutter. No.
Yep.
Then audio and visual.
Same thing. Audio, you know, for web accessibility, you need to have, if there's a video, it needs to have closed captioning for people who are hard of hearing. In an ideal world, it would also have video description for people who can't see it. It's funny to me. A lot of the videos that I see on assistive technology are not video described, and it's usually just music and text.
Hmm.
How about the, now, the writing that is involved? I mean, I guess there are all sorts of fonts that can be used. Is there any particular font or set of fonts that you all find better than others?
Well, for people that are partially sighted, there are certain fonts that are really important. Arial is one. They're sans serif. It's easier for someone who has low vision to read sans serif. But I think the writing, too, they're talking about is the level,
the font?
No, the readability level.
Yeah.
Plain language
plain
is
language,
important.
Yeah, plain language, and then I've also learned that font, not all caps is not a good idea.
No.
Oh, okay.
Definitely not. All caps for people that have my eye challenge is a disaster.
Well, Anne and Chris, you're not going to believe it. We've run out of time.
I believe
oh, no.
It.
We have run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. We could probably go on for another half an hour about this important issue, but maybe we'll have Anne and Chris back soon.
That would be fine.
Anne, will
sure.
you come back? Please be sure to tune in next time on the fourth Tuesday of every month, and it's at 2 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 7 a.m., and we hope you've enjoyed the program and gotten information about your legal rights and participation in the community. I'm Joe Austin, your host for Legal Matters on Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. After it's broadcast, you can find it as a podcast at our website, www.triangleReadingService.org, where you can listen to it again and share it with others. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode, or you wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, and please do call these in. If you want us to address something in particular, please call 919-832-5138.